Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I am delighted to be joined by Des McLean. Des, welcome to A Celtic State of Mind. How are you doing?
It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Paul. I was listening to some of your podcasts on my daily walk, my daily COVID-19 90-minute walk that I've started doing for the last 8 weeks every single day, because we've had great sunshine. So I've been looking for things to listen, and your podcast has been, it's been excellent. So it's been perfect for that kind of thing.
I appreciate that, Des. I made a decision early doors during lockdown to do the podcast daily for two reasons. Obviously, you're providing a wee bit of light entertainment for the Celtic fans who are interested in listening to pods, but also just to give myself a wee bit of structure to my day, because you know, otherwise I might have been climbing the walls. How are you managing, as well as your daily walk days, how are you managing to keep occupied during these trying times?
Trying times, indeed. It's just as you said, you need a structure, you need a focus, otherwise you know, you'll go off your head. Homeschooling with a wee fella, my wee boy's 8, Harry, and just had his birthday lockdown there. But it seems like everybody's going to have their birthday in lockdown this year, the longer it's going on. So I'm recording sketches at home for Nation Radio, you know, the wee comedy sketches and all that. I'm on there a Saturday and Sunday with me and Susan Maguire. And I'm doing the walk. I'm doing loads of things that you just never, or you made excuses before that you never had the time to do. But see now, it's actually funny, because I was looking forward to doing this with you. And I said to my wife, I don't know when I'm going to fit this in. And she's like, so much, you know, what did we do before, be honest? So now every hour, honestly, you're doing something. You're not just going, oh, I'm not sitting about watching the telly. We're doing something. And you know, even if it's, the back garden's been totally, well, that was my wife, everything she's about, it looks fantastic. So yes, you've got to be doing something every day, something challenging. Well, there was last night, for instance. I did a virtual comedy club. We had 62 families or homes that all tuned in via Zoom. So at first I was a bit wary. That's the third one in a row. And you can see the punters. It was a bit like Celebrity Squares. You can see the punters all sitting there. You can see Paul and Fife and Ian and Lithgow and Davey and Margaret and Rikesi and somebody in Australia. It was great. So you're seeing them and you're hearing them laugh. And you know, there's some... I've been asking... The good thing is I had a comedian on from New York. And you know, so you can get MD now. You don't need, and the thing is, you don't need to pick people up and go, oh, right, hurry up, I'll get you there, I'll get you at Bishop Briggs Close at 8:15. They're sitting in the room and they're gigging. So we had a lassie from London, we had a boy from Ireland, Mickey Bartlett, Irish comedian, and Ray Bradshaw, big football man as well, was on off. So it was fantastic. The feedback today, obviously there was a few wee glitches, you know, that you can't help it. But the feedback, so that was good as well, and everybody was saying, oh, Des, great, because it's the next best thing to, we're missing comedy clubs, we're missing the pub, going to the pub, going to a restaurant, going to a wee cafe, missing families, we're missing outside life, you know. So that was a good thing. A wee bit of escapism last night for for 62 households that all tuned into Des McLean and Friends comedy in your front room with Zoom.
That's brilliant. Des, I think, you know, we're learning and adapting to try and get our output out there. And I think, you know, once we get back to whatever normality is going to be, do you think we'll continue to embrace the technology? Because you can have it both ways then, can't you?
So it's been a wee bit up the arse for a lot of things that I've had to go and do. And that comedy club. Also, you saw me last week on Facebook Live. And all this time, I'm quite ashamed because you've got a facility there that's free. You don't need to pay, you know, a producer or a sound engineer or not. So I just put my phone in and I set up the tripod. No, I didn't. I'm telling a lie. A guy dropped off a tripod. A listener, a guy who was watching me, went, "I thoroughly enjoyed that wee hour, Des, all the voices, the jokes, the stories." And he left a tripod in my driveway. So there you go, the old social distancing. And he says, so it was much better. So I went on that, the wee Facebook Live, which I should have been doing before anyway, because just to plug the wee virtual gig that I was doing on Zoom. And every time I came back in the house, another half a dozen tickets were sold, every time I went out and spoke for 5 minutes. So you should be using all these things. Why not? You should be embracing them all.
Absolutely, yeah.
Even the exercise. I was going to Pure Gym every week, and you're going round and kind of carrying on and not doing the full... Now that we've had to cancel the membership, I'm walking 90 minutes every day.
And it is about really just appreciating your surroundings a wee bit more, using the back garden with the wee fella. He's loving it, you know?
Oh, it was funny when I phoned you at first last week. I think it was last Sunday. One day just rolls into another. Every day's like Sunday, isn't it? And every night's like Friday or Saturday night, depending on how many bottles of wine you consume. It was funny when I phoned you up and I says, I was walking by with a wee Bluetooth thing. I was like, 16 car, we take it to Sky. And you says, Des, I'm on the treadmill. And I said, that's even mayor Alan Party. I'm on the treadmill working from home. So as you're starting to, you know, we're all turning into our own little, you know, Bluetooth and thing and this and that and recordings. So it's all good, though. It's all good. You're learning stuff.
Again, through necessity, you're absolutely right. I mean, obviously, the one big thing that we talk about on A Celtic State of Mind is our football club, Des. And as this has developed, I've spoken to a few financial experts, normal Celtic fans, and I'm always asking about their opinions on where we're going to be at the other end. I think what we've been witnessing is nothing short of a soap opera with regards to the club playing out of Ibrox in the SPFL. Celtic are sitting back and just watching it develop. But my actual concern is that Scottish football as a whole, maybe not immediately, but as a result of this, or sped up by this process, I don't think Celtic will be part of Scottish football, Des. And I seen a tweet today from David Lowe, who suggested something similar. What do you think? I mean, I know that you've got the traditionalists, and we're going to talk about games that happened, let's say, at Love Street, for example. That whole Scottish tradition is embedded in you as a Celtic fan, but it really has shown itself up for being tin pot over the last couple of months. Do you think maybe Peter Lowell and co are looking elsewhere?
They might be forced into that, Paul. They might be. And you're right, it's a disgrace, it is a soap opera, it's a pantomime, it's tin pot, exactly as you say. And the thing is, we might end up having to do that. It's not a choice we want to do, but there's businesses going under, there's pubs going, so smaller clubs are not going to survive this. No. So so are you thinking, you said it last week as well, that this could affect the old 10?
Well, I think it's the only thing that's going to stop it, in actual fact, Des.
I don't even want to think about it, but I know what you're saying, and it's ominous. But there's lower clubs that are definitely, well, I hope I'm wrong, but they're going to go to the ball. And as I say, businesses, small businesses, clubs like you've said St Mirren and what have you, you know, how are these clubs going to survive? They can't. No. You can't keep furloughing players and, you know, pay staff and, you know, it's just not going to happen.
You look at a club, I mean, there's a club just a few miles up the road there, East End Park, Dunfermline, and when they were going through their administration process, Des, I got involved in fundraising, so I was in and about the place, and you got to know quite a lot of the staff up there. And they were in a situation where the kit man was buying the kit. So he was buying all the old towels and the tape out of his own pocket. You know, the club weren't financing that. And Paul Gallagher, you'll remember Paul the goalie, used to play with St Mirren, Dundee United. He was a chef, so he was cooking all the guys their meals. And they were all chipping in out of their own pockets. Now that was, for me, Dunfermline growing up was a Premier League football club. And obviously they've been out of the top division for some time. They've got a cracking wee stadium up there. And that's a club just normally... how precarious it is financially for a club of that level. And I'm like yourself, I'm looking at it, profit to doom, Des, and I'm thinking there's going to be clubs that will either go to the wall or they'll turn part-time. And Celtic, if they want to progress and they want to still have that kind of focus on European football, etc., I don't think Scottish football is going to be the place for it.
And you're right, that is the only way that the 10 would have been stopped. And we were sailing along nicely for another, you know, league title and another treble, and it's just all went horribly wrong. No one could ever, but you're right. The way that you've just described Dunfermline there, that is the way that probably another at least dozen clubs, you know, and if that was them, that's the way everybody's going to have to behave now. But it's frightening. But what about the old Bundesliga starting next week?
That's frightening in itself as well, eh?
Can you do the old social distancing, you know, playing, but mark him, no, 2 metres. You know what I mean? How's it going to happen?
You know, with regards to this necessity to get the clubs back playing, and it's all down to money. It's all down to money, Des. And I think football had gone so far there that, you know, just one thing, as massive as it's been, that the whole house of cards just falls, you know. And the whole model of English football, for example, just to use an example, has been shown up for what it is. I used to react to people who said, you know, if Celtic came down to England, they wouldn't be top eight. And my counter-argument was always, if any club came from the English Premiership, they'd go bust in a fortnight. Because if you want to talk about it like that, it wouldn't be Celtic as they are now. Celtic would go down and have the finances would go through the roof, and we'd be able to compete with the same players and offer the same wages. So there's no way we would be left languishing at the bottom of the Premier League. But any club down there, because they've built their financial model so precariously, if something like this happens, or if they were playing in Scottish football, they would go bust. And quite a few of the kind of bigger clubs are facing down the barrel of a gun at the moment.
And by the way, you're absolutely right. And it's all the TV money now, and it's all down to that. But I've had that same debate with so many people, and you're thinking, that is staggering. Celtic would be an even bigger brand down there. They wouldn't just fit in or hold their own. You'd be sitting top four. Celtic are a massive brand. They would be up there. And Celtic would be 60,000. A lot of these teams down there don't even get 30,000. Celtic would be packing out. You imagine playing the Chelsea's, Man U's, Arsenal's on every other week. Oh, Celtic are worldwide. You know, like, teams like Newcastle and all that, you know, they're not in Celtic's league when it comes to the brand and Leicester, you know. And all these things, we dig up Brendan there, can I just say it? Absolutely. Sorry. So, you know what I mean? That was more Martin O'Neill there. You know, when I came here, I saw, you know, poor John Dykes, and I said, you know, I thought his podcast was okay, but I was wrong. It was absolutely, absolutely sensational. So,
you know, I was meant to be chatting to Martin O'Neill during this process of lockdown. We had a gig, and I must admit, Des, he was one of the ones I thought to myself, I'm a wee bit nervous speaking to him. So I was chatting to Chris Sutton and John Hartson, who were also on the bill. And I says to him, I'm a wee bit nervous, guys. And he goes, so are we. So are we, because he's still our gaffer. You know, and he just has that air about him. Have you ever met Martin O'Neill?
Yes, I met him. I was doing a gig. I was doing like Celtic Player of the Year things and all that and stuff. And Neil Lennon got me a ticket for Seville. And I was sitting next to his mum and dad and stuff like that. And it was amazing. And O'Neill, he's a man of few words, but he's got that. You know, he's got that same thing that obviously Steen and Clough and all these guys, you know, he's just got that respect. He's a man of few words as well. I remember Sutton saying that. It was just a couple of words and that bit, and he wasn't a man for hanging about and all that. And yeah, I met him, but he was dead serious. He was always dead serious. But I always had him doing as a kind of quite a funny, well, a guy with a good sense of humour and all that. I remember he was talking about when he got dropped for the European Cup final, and Clough had dropped him, and he was raging. You know, I think it was the first one or second, it might have been Malmö. It was a final anyway, and he dropped him. He had a niggling injury, and he knew he wasn't fit. And he says he gave Clough the Vicky the two fingers. And he went, I'll let that go, young man. I seen that in the reflection in the window as he was walking by, you know. And I just thought, you know, that's my favourite ever. That football movie, it's absolutely astounding. Michael Sheen, So you associate O'Neill with, you know, that Clough was his gaffer, and then, Sutton and Harps and Larson, that was their man. That was their biggest years in football. And yeah, that he will always be the gaffer to them, the bold O'Neill.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Neil Lennon, because, and going further back to O'Neill and Clough, because I always see it as a procession and, you know, handing down the baton almost as Brian Clough. Martin O'Neill would have, even without trying, been influenced by Clough's managerial processes. And I think Lennon would have also had the same process with O'Neill. Do you think, because obviously O'Neill won European Cups with Nottingham Forest, as did Brian Clough, do you think that Lennon has got something in him? Because I've been discussing this as well, Des, and particularly this season, I've seen a lot of positives in our European performances that we weren't getting out of Brendan Rodgers.
Rodgers was going toe-to-toe with the likes of Barcelona and all that. You know, that was madness. And you're like, you can't do that. Just park the bus. Just park the... I remember Mark McGlone saying, this is not good. You need to just play ugly for this one. It's not good for the kids and all that to get 7 goals hammered by them. You can't... That is when we should have just went, right, we need to play ugly and we need to get through this. Maybe get beat a 2-1 or 3-1. Even that's wishful thinking. And that was madness. But Roger still had that arrogance where he'd done nothing wrong. After, you know, we get hammered with them, we get hammered with PSG. It was silly. So there's no question about that. I think Lennon, when he came back to Celtic, at the time we were all saying, oh, wait a minute, this is not box office, no, that's, it's Lennon, da-da-da. But, and it, when Lennon came back, he really showed a maturity. And he'd obviously learned a few lessons, stuff like that, and he'll always be a passionate guy, like, to put it mildly. He's all, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when he came back, Celtic in Europe, that was incredible. I believe that, I know people are going to argue with this, right? I know we beat Barcelona 2-1 at Parkhead, right? That was an amazing result. But I think that Lazio away was an even better result. And I'll tell you why, because Barcelona hammered us that night. It was Barcelona versus, right? It hammered us, Big Foster. We went over to Lazio. We'd never won in Italy, ever.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Ever. You know, that was the first result in Italy, and we went over there. By the way, we were all here of them in the second half.
It's a good point you make there about the Barca game, because you look back in a kind of haze of reminiscence and you think, wow, what a result. But it was young Neely Mochen that spoke to me and he says, Paul, I hated it that night. I hated it because we were under the cosh so much. Fair enough, the result and everything else. But I think when you look at even the possession, it was something like 70-30. It wasn't far off of that, you know?
No, and the thing that gets you right now, when a team like Barcelona, I mean, that team were up there, the greatest of all time. When a team like Barcelona nickname your goalkeeper The Wall, that just shows you, you know, we were hammered. That, I mean, we were like absolute battered. It was like that. I mean, it was like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan. Every time we were like, no, it was the longest 90 minutes ever. Nice. So it was an amazing result against the best team in the world, right? Of course, Lazio aren't as good as them, but for Celtic to go away, you know, and play the way they did that night, Celtic were amazing. And that final goal, the wee chip, fantastic, awesome.
Encha, I just think he's one of the guys that he always gives us a wee taster of what he can do, Des, but we've never seen it for 20 games on the bounce kind of thing. I think he's got it in him. And I think Lennon is capable of dragging that out of him. When you look at the man management, I've mentioned before, Lennon's man management is Scott Brown, for example. Brown really started performing under Lennon first time round. Lee Griffiths as well. He gave James Forrest his debut. I just think Lennon's a good man manager, and he could. I mean, Encham was talking about leaving and all that in the summer, remember? He was talking to the French press. Lennon didn't go off his head at him or berate him in public. He just, you know, quietly got on with it and actually got a performance out of the guy. And he'll be remembered forever, you know, with the celebration, everything about that goal.
You're absolutely right what you say. You know, it's frustrating. See if Rogic and the Bold Oliver, see if they two could play at their peak every game, we would have the best midfield. Those two are absolutely, have got touches of real, real European class. I mean, like class acts, but the consistency just isn't there. And that's it. But you're absolutely right. You see all these assumptions, you go, why are we not getting that every week? And Rogic as well. I mean, there's Sutton raves and raves and raves about him. When you see some of the stuff, some of the goals that he scored against Rangers with that left foot, magical. But then there's other times where he breaks your heart and you're like, oh, come on, Tom. You know, and he's just not in it. He's worse than a man, sure. And it's frustrating. It must be so frustrating because you know these guys can do it.
You're talking about consistency. One of my biggest favourites of the kind of modern day was Samaras. And Samaras and consistency certainly didn't go hand in hand. When he was good, he was dynamite. And then when he was bad, he was just a man short. So when you think back through your Celtic supporting life, Des, who stands out as your own heroes, you know, going back to your youth and then coming through watching Celtic?
Can I just touch on that Samaras thing there? That's interesting. Samaras is one of these guys who will always split the audience. He'll always 50. And when we were over in Greece, a lovely wee place, Zakynthos. It was a wee glimpse of heaven. 4 years in a row, lovely wee place, right? But even they knew. The waiter came over and I was like, oh, Olympiacos, da, 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 and you've talked football. Now, the universal language of football is always good with old waiters and all that. And they went, Celtic, Glasgow, Rangers, and I went, Celtic, and they turned around and went, and I went, Samaras, and he went, hey, lazy bugger. Even they knew. They were saying, hair, and oh, look at me, I love it. Even they're saying, he loves himself. The thing, but he's a late. So even they knew, Samaras looked apart, he sounded apart. And there was games again, remember that game against Rangers, where it was a Samaras, and he would go out and defy all odds, and you'd be like, I can't believe the big man. But he should have been, he's another one, if he was consistent, then yes, definitely. But you're talking about a certain player, right? You know how at the moment we're watching YouTube, everything on it. I was sitting, and the good thing with YouTube is you watch something and it will take you conveniently. Let's watch this. So I'm sitting, wife's went to bed, I'm sitting there up to 1 in the morning, years later, during this. And it just made me realise an amazing player Paul McStay was. Mm-hmm. Because in 1982, he was playing in a 3-2 game. McLeod scored the winner. And he was the man of the match. He was 18, right, man of the match. And he was crunching tackles like Kieran Tierney, and he was passing the ball, you know, like the inch perfect. And he was raw, and he was like pure. It was just amazing. What a player. But then 15 years later, in 1987, he was man of the match when he ran the show against Rangers. And the interesting thing is, we're in a wee kind of Celtic group chat, and one of my mates was saying, well, it depends what era you were brought up. And he says, because he says he started going to the games when it was a Liam Brady. And he was saying McStay wasn't as good as Collins then. And that McStay did take a wee dip then. Do you remember that?
Definitely.
And I remember at the games, we were all arguing. I'm going to McStay, da, da. And they're all going, you know, Collins was a man, obviously, at the time. You're thinking it was an absolute disgrace that John Collins only won one trophy for Celtic against Airdrie, that the Oindock thing. But McStay did kind of go off the boil then. But then he came back, he bounced back. But it was funny, I still remember that time. Remember we were saying Peter Grant always kind of split the crowd and the bold Anton Rogan, you know, at heart of a lineup. But that was funny when I was like, what are you talking about? McStay's the best ever and all that, because we're talking about all-time 11. And he went, no, at that time. But then again, It was desperate times, wasn't it? The old Brady McCarry.
It was, Des. I mean, we do a thing actually on a Sunday night, and it's the Celtic State of Mind Video Club, right? It was kind of inspired by Tim Burgess. He does the listening parties on Twitter. So he'll get somebody from a band to get involved in the chat, and everybody plays the album at, let's say, 8 o'clock at night, and then the guy for the band chats them through the songs and people ask questions and stuff. So we've been doing something similar with the Axom Video Club. And people are so interested in the 90s, even though it was really rubbish, it was really poor what were being served up. But you're putting on the Celtic Collection videos and you've got Andy Payton scoring goals and Jerry Craney and all these guys. You know, looking back, and this is relevant to today and where we are with the SPFL and Rangers, because we were absolutely murdered back then. But two things, we used to laugh at ourselves for it, and also we'd done something about it. This mob now, going through this pantomime as you described it, they're being fed a line by whoever it might be, and they're taking it all in. They're not questioning anything. They needed £10 million by the end of last month. Nobody's worried where that £10 million came from. You know, it's just another £10 million of debt. Nobody's questioning it, Des. And what's going to happen is, invariably, they'll be back where they were in 2012. Whereas the Celtic fans clubbed together. You mentioned Mark McGlone, he was a massive part of that. And they were organised and they were able to kind of overturn the old regime. There's a different attitude with the club playing out Ibrox and now in the fan base, who, I don't know if they believe that they can never be toppled. There's an elite attitude to them, Des, and it'll be their undoing once again, I believe.
We were discussing this, and people are starting to think that Rangers are just trying to, you know, like, right, you know, like the wee spoiled brat in this class that everybody's doing well and going for things. And they want to just kind of self-harm and torpedo themselves so that they won't be here for the 9 and the 10 and stuff like that, you know. Or it's like, we're no playing, we're no thing. You know, this should have been a result for Rangers, because Celtic were going for that fourth treble, and you know, it's us that are losing out, and it's all this tainted titles and all this carry on that you hear. You know, I wouldn't put it past them, but you know that Stuart Roberts said on Play the other night, they didn't say that they were coerced and really know that. So even though we all heard them saying it, and it was a public document, and they said it many times, and that was incredible.
It's embarrassing, to be fair. And you've mentioned what you're doing at the moment, comedy-wise, Des. Talk us through your introduction to comedy. I spoke to a friend of yours, Susie McCabe, on A Celtic State of Mind, and I says to her, when did you realise you were funny? There must be, or is it just all, is it omnipresent where you're just able to make people laugh from a young age and you're not quite sure how you're doing it?
I remember as a wee boy, the parties, and it was, they would put a wee bonnet round, or they would come, and I was always doing the impersonations at the, it was always whoever was on the telly, and Frank Spencer and other thing. And I was always, my head was always full of Kerry Owen, and every job I'd done, the only highlight was lunchtime where I would entertain them and tell them funny stories and do all the voices and all that. So it was the only thing that I was any good at. There was a comedy club called Blackfriars in Merchant City. It was the only comedy club at the time in Scotland. And I went to a wee comedy course run by Viv G. She'd been doing them for years now. After that, I had the bug, but I didn't know what to do. There wasn't many comedy clubs in Glasgow. There was neither The Stand, there wasn't any Jonglers, nothing like that. So I went along and I did a 5-minute open spot, and it went really well. It was all over the place, but there was a few wee highlights. And then the BBC, I went the following Sunday night, the BBC were recording for the BBC New Comedian of the Year. So they said to me, we've recorded you, you're in the second round. I was like, what? Aye, second round. I was like, really? I was like, oh my God. So I beat Jimmy Carr in the semi-final in King Tut's. I beat him. Where is he now? So I beat him and I got to the final, but I ran over my 8 minutes really badly. I talked for Scotland. So it was amazing. So you get £1,000 and you know, you're way to the fringe. So that was the first one. Then the following year, I went to the fringe and I did a one-man show called Des McLean 5 Stars. It wasn't like, and it was me and McDonald's with a 5-star thing stood on their lap. It's quite a cheeky wee title that got a few punters in. So then after that, I was on the BBC Live Floor Show when BBC, you know, had, when a lot of people were watching telly back then, no like now. And that was a good wee break. So after that, I joined, did a few more fringe shows. And then you were starting to do long shows in Glasgow and the comedy festival and stuff like that. And then I joined Radio Clyde. So between, for 6 years, and I became the Des McLean 8-10 sketch guy in the morning with Plunge McNugget. And the Billy Connolly phone call, oh my word. So we phoned up everybody. By the way, I phoned up. We made 3,000 phone calls. You're not going to believe it. Paul Cooney used to run and go, why is Plunge McNugget phoning the Vatican? Why is Ralph Brisbane phoning the White House? We were phoning the White House and the Vatican and the bold George Bowie. So I would, and the best thing was, I need to tell you this, right? I phoned up Rod Stewart as Billy Connolly, and I went, I haven't seen you, Parkhead, for a while, you nutter. Rod Stewart was in Clyde, and he's going, you all right, Billy? And I'm in another studio, and I'm going, aye, so how was I no invited to your wedding, you fucking nutter, you madman? And he was going, oh, I'm sorry, Billy, it's down to the wife. Rod Stewart's actually backpedaling and apologising for no saying that, and I feel I'm causing all sorts of bother here. So we phoned Joan Rivers, the late Joan Rivers, Quentin Tarantino, Walter Smith, Gordon Strachan. Walter Smith and Gordon Strachan went mental, right? I mean, really. So it just shows you the pressure of the old. But the best one was Sean Connery, Paul. Sean Connery, right? James Bond, you know, you're growing up, James Bond, the coolest guy. And he was doing a book signing in Waterstones in Edinburgh. And George Bowie went, why don't you phone up? I went, no. He went, Sean Connery's doing a book signing. I'm not, he went, perfect, Billy Connolly, Sean Connery. It was a bank holiday Monday, I'll never forget it. And I went, why would Billy Connolly be phoning up? Go try, just 8 days. I went, okay, if it doesn't work out, just please try it, okay. So I phoned up, and I went, how the devil are you? It's Billy Connolly here. I'm looking to speak to Sean Connery. Aye, so is he there? And she went, there's now Sean Connery here in that horrible Edinburgh accent that she had. And I went, there you go, I tried. And I went out to my motor, I'm no joking. And I was driving away, I went, yes, getting up the road. And Bowie came, banged it up the windscreen, Des, Sean Connery's on the phone. Sean Connery's on the phone. Looking for you. Well, looking for Billy Connolly. I went, oh, you're joking. I'm going to get in there and you're going to go, aye. I went, oh, Des, go in. This is comedy gold. So I went and I put the headphones on, record, and I went, how the devil are you? And they went, Billy, how are you? And I went, oh, and I don't know why. I just went, ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-dum, ba-ba-da-da-da. Da-da. And then I went, we were expecting you, you fucking nutter. I'm calling Sean Connery a fucking nutter, right? So we dick for a bros. And Connery went, he's laughing away and all that. And all the news team are saying, don't go there, Billy. He'll sue, his people will sue. He, right, he doesn't have a sense of humour and all that. And I went, aye, so, what you been up to? And I, at this time, Ofcom were coming down big time. And I thought, I don't want this call to go because, you needed permission for the phone calls and all that, right? And so he's talking away. And he was brand new and he was laughing away. And he turned to him and went, do you want to meet? You know, we could meet for lunch in the Scotchman Hotel in Edinburgh. They obviously met there. We could go to your suite, you know, Billy. And I went, why don't we meet halfway at Hart Hill Services, you fucking madman? I'll treat you to a wee gangster, you fucking nutter. And he was laughing away. 28 minutes later, he's still on the phone. And I turned around and I went, so I'd run out of things to say to Sean Connery, and the poor guy's on the phone. And then I went, so I went, have you any juicy movies coming up? Any big gigs, my man? And he went, you know I haven't, Billy. You were the first I told. And he went, I'm going to have to go. And he went, you know, I don't think that was Billy Connolly. Beep, and hung up the phone. And I went, yes, a dancer. Right. And I went, George, we didn't get permission on the ball. Where we went, ack, it'll be fine. I went, right. And I went, no, we can't put that out. This isn't Sean Batty. This is Sean Connery. Right. The next morning, it went out, and it was amazing. The emails, and I was like, oh, no, right. And like, nothing happened. And I was expecting, you know, and it was in front of the papers, 007, it's, you know, it's James Cond, funny man Dez, you know, and his license to fill, all the usual kind of headlines. And then nothing happened. I thought, oh, we've got away with that. And then 2 weeks later, I'm doing it at Celtic Park, and I'm collecting, usually when I tell this at gigs, you get a boo off all the Rangers, so I can tell you. So I'm doing it at Celtic Park, and I walked out, and there's a big cheque for Cash for Kids from Celtic. There you go. Thank you. Hello to Cash for Kids, £50,000. There's McLean, and I walked back and to my seat, and guess who's standing over my seat, staring at me? Billy Connolly. And Connolly just stared at me and went, McLean, you wee fucker. and now forget what he said, Paul. He went, I'm going to end up apologising the rest of my life for you, you fucking madman. And I went, is that about, aye, that's having the poor old fucker on the phone for half an hour, you dirty. Right, and then I went, Billy, they made me do it. I said, I didn't want to do it. I went, it was just a laugh, Billy. He went, just a laugh. It was fucking brilliant. Right, and he gave me a big hug, and I thought, oh.
Of course, you already had a relationship with Billy Connolly, a friendship with him, because he gave you a run home to your mum's house, is that right?
In Black Hill.
Yes.
See when people say, oh, Billy Connolly thinks he has something new and all that nonsense, right? Absolute nonsense, right? The guy, he was going to Edinburgh, through Edinburgh, and he went, where do you want dropped off? And I was like, oh, no. You're all right, Billy. I'd met him doing it at the Hilton, and we sat there for a couple of hours, he's sitting with a wee pot of tea and all that. And I'm like, this is Billy Connolly. See, when I first met him, it was like seeing Elvis Presley, right? It was like he was my hero.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
For a wee boy, I remember. And then he went, I'll drop you there. He dropped me at Black Hill where my ma stays. She still stays there. And we were driving down and he shouted over at my ma. I went, I was like, any chance? He went, but I'm now your son's chauffeur, Patsy. Oh, he's made it now. Billy Connolly's his chauffeur. Brilliant. How you doing? Is that your grand? And couldn't he be any nicer or more down-to-earth or humble? So whenever I hear that, you know, you're thinking, no. The guy's been absolutely brilliant, a lovely, lovely man. So that's my hero, yes.
How does it feel, though, for a Scottish comedian, Des, how does it feel when someone like Billy Connolly states that you're his favourite comedian?
Well, you play football, didn't you, Paul?
Yes.
Imagine that man up there, Messi, or even Larson, saying that, but... you know that Paul John Dykes? Oh, he knows how to kick a ball. It would give you a tingle, wouldn't it, through you? So, Billy, I'm driving up the road. I'll never forget it. Friday afternoon, and my mate phoned me up and went, I'm listening to Radio Scotland. They're interviewing Billy Connolly, Janice Forsyth. And he turned around and he went, there's a guy called Des McLean. Oh, my God, he's brilliant. Have you seen him? Oh, my, he's my favourite. And I was like, I didn't believe my mate when he told me. Then my other mate phoned me up who didn't know him, and he went, Billy Connolly's gave you a mention. Oof, that wouldn't do well with the comedians. That put a lot of noses. See, that night when I got the CD from the guys at Radio Scotland, oh man, I remember sitting playing it over and over, that wee line, and I was sitting going, I just kept playing it. And my wife is, you're pathetic. I went, it's Billy Connolly. Are you kidding? And that would be the equivalent of you playing football, right? And like Maravchuk passing the ball and you heeding it. in, you'd be playing that goal all your life, wouldn't you?
Nevermore, yeah.
It was amazing. It was a dream come true.
You were saying there, you know, how would it feel if Larsson or Messi said that? I'm just looking for Rudy Vata to say that to me, Des, because Rudy plays centre-half for the Celtic Old Boys, and he goes through me every single time because I'm no good enough.
I've seen the wee photo, he's standing at the front. And the fiveies,
he takes it so seriously, this. But he's got the Albanian president involved in, like, retweeting the games and all this kind of stuff, you know, because that's his big pal.
Well, every little helps.
Absolutely. We've spoken about Billy Connolly. See, Scottish comedy, you know, when I was growing up, was very healthy. I always think back, and I think back to things like, obviously, Billy Connolly, but coming up to the kind of modern era, you've got your Kevin Bridges, your Frankie Boyle, that kind of era. But I also loved, you know, the stuff that Phil Difford did with the Only an Excuse in the early days. Des, I thought it was kind of groundbreaking. They used to sell the cassettes and the fanzines. It eventually got into the charts and all this kind of stuff. And then you've got your Rabsy Nisbet and you've got all that kind of stuff. What is it about Scottish comedy? And is it still as healthy now as it was during the my kind of upbringing in the 80s?
It's funny because Ian Paterson was I thought the guy was a great writer, and he is. Phil Differ's a very, very good pal of mine, and just messaged yesterday a few laughs. And Ian Paterson, a very mild-mannered, lovely man, you know, and when you see,
it's all a bit swat, a wee bit of hand in my waist on that, Jamesy boy, eh?
Yeah, he's right, Rab, because no man will minch me the old Rab Sheen or that.
I think she's missing a snarler. I think she's missing a charger boy, right?
And see if you've met Ian, he's just a, you know, very erudite, lovely man. And I mean, but we were discussing this, remember, about certain people who, when you meet them, you go, God. So, Scottish comedy's always been brilliant. It's always been a bit mad and crazy and aggressive. Billy, obviously, back in the day, when he, they almost have been like, what is that, you know? But Rab C was groundbreaking because it was just this mad Alky, this madman who was always going to get his gyro and a,
see you, let me tell you this boy.
And he was a brilliant, you know, psychologist as well in life and stuff like that. So I did Tommy for Ian Paterson. Of course, he wrote that. And that was brilliant as well. I mean, that was really, really funny all the way through. So Ian Paterson, a brilliant, brilliant writer. But yeah, you're right about The Only Excuse. I remember when it came out, and it was round about, I think, I might be a year out here, but I think we're talking, it was when Celtic really needed a laugh. Round about 94, 95, 96, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that at the time, Jerry McNee, who was sitting in the audience and all that, and remember McNee you'd always got to read his column, that, Gascoigne number 8 and all that, we call him, right? McNee, I thought, was a good kind of confrontational, you know, thing. And you saw them sitting there, and they're all laughing away, and they're taking the piss out of them, and there was nothing else like that. Only Excuse, and they were, you know, how do you know he's a Protestant? Well, he looks like one. Remember all that? It was really good. You know, did Tam Cowan write for him as well? For Phil Differ, obviously, stuff like that. But now everything's, you know, everybody's a star on Facebook and all that now, and people are all making their own things, and it's totally, you know, it's totally fractured now, if you know what I mean. That's great, but it's like, you know, you go to put the telly on now, and the long gone are the days of, I remember like everybody on a Monday morning going, did you see that audience with Willie Connolly last night? And the whole of Scotland had watched it.
Yeah.
Now, if I say to you, which season are you on the Breaking Bad? You'll go, I'm just at season, season 4. We're all watching the telly and box sets at different times and all that. And it's a wee bit of a shame, you know. Did you see that thing last night? No, I didn't see it. I'm watching this. It's all kind of finished, all that, isn't it?
Completely changed nowadays, isn't it? I mean, it's no longer part of that day-to-day routine of coming home 7:30, watch whatever on the telly. And you think you'll catch up, or it's on demand, like you say, you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime and that kind of stuff. And there is a wee bit of a sadness to that as well, because I think the introduction of comedians and comedy was great. I was watching, actually, just last night, in between editing a podcast, I was watching a lot of kind of, you know, the young ones and Rick Mayall and Ben Elton and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like unbelievable looking back now, thinking to myself, that was tremendous. Nothing quite like it, really, since then.
It was amazing. And Ben Elton, he was touring again there. And Ben Elton was an incredible... Remember Saturday Night Live and all that, right? Ben Elton would come out, and he'd come out with all this topical material, and he was brilliant. And you were like, wow, this guy... It was just whatever happened that week, he was bang, 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 great. And he kind of fell away. He went writing a lot of good things on that. When I say fell away, he obviously made enough money and what have you, but... Aye, the young ones were nobody'd ever seen anything like that either, because you'd stuff like Monty Python and all that was a real acquired taste for a lot of people, and then the young ones did come out, and it was totally, You know, it's just, you know, a mad punk putting an axe through his head, and then Rick's down there going, "Oh, look at me!" Like, and it was mental. And Neil, and all that. I mean, it was, and it was really, really good. But there's things like that, like Only Fools and Horses, Fawlty Towers. I know it's the old cliche. They do not show their age at all. There's other stuff you look back at, Love Thy Neighbour, and you're going, "Oh, you can't show that now. That's shocking." But when you look at Fawlty Towers, a masterpiece. It's like a Frank Sinatra song or a thing. You go, that will never ever age, and you're still laughing. I was laughing away at an old Rab C. Nesbitt thing, mate. The old Naked video as well, all that stuff, and like you meant the young ones. There was some cracking stuff on, but even Fools and Horses as well. You know, I know it's a wee bit more gentler and all that, a wee bit more. I was sitting with the mother and father-in-law at Christmas here, and we sat and watched a few of the Christmas specials. Fantastic stuff. Aye, you know, real aye. Sad, and then bursting out laughing at the same time. Good old Del Boy and all that.
Again, going back to someone who you know really well, Susie McCabe, she gave a really good insight into the comedy circuit and how Celtic fans, probably because they're good at self-deprecation, but Celtic fans have got a sense of humour, Des. And is that something that really goes to the roots of the makeup of a Celtic fan, I guess, where you look at, you know, the oppression, the Irish diaspora, you always find humour in bad situations, and maybe that's, and then people always grab an acoustic guitar and sing, and that's where the music comes into it, you know. It seems to me, and no one's told me any different, it seems to me that Celtic fans have got that. They've got the artistic creativity, they've got the sense of humour. Have you found that yourself working within that field?
Absolutely. I can't put my finger on it completely, right, but like if you talk about Kevin, Wee Susie and Kevin Bridges and Frankie Boyle and Billy Connolly, you get through them all, right through them all, and it's I think it's because I remember a time, it was Graeme Spears, the journalist, says Celtic fans need to have a sense, it's just something they need, they've got a real sense of humour. It's their kind of a release valve. Because that time when we were really in dire straits and we're all singing "There's Only Two Michael Kellys" when a fox ran on the park, right? we were heading for the iceberg big time there, right? Big time. And we're still singing funny songs. I remember they're gutted. I remember that night, and we're all arguing that, like, the people who were anti, like, Save Ourselves and all that, Aunt Matt McGlone, they were all arguing, fighting with us. I mean, like shouting, bawling, and it was horrible. I think there was 11,000 there that night. But we're still singing funny songs. And I remember Graeme Spears saying, Rangers fans have got this real hard-edged anger to them. Like, they must not, they won't tolerate. We're on a winning run. We cannot. And Celtic, we were fifth in the league, and we're singing Always Looking the Bright Side of Life. We need to have that, and Celtic fans have always got that. That is self-deprecating. And I don't know if it's because we had to go and confess to the priest every week, whether we liked it or no, the vast majority. So I think that's it. And sometimes I just made up funny routines that never happened to get a wee couple of Hail Marys and then out of there again. I don't know if that's got something to do with it, but there is a deal where you can't kid them on. And a few of my mates, like you make a wee joke about Rangers, and it's like, oh, I need for that. And you're going, it was a joke, you know, but I don't know, I can't. But definitely, the amount of Celtic fans that are comedians is incredible.
And we're all laughing at the moment, that's for sure, Des. We've mentioned a couple of people here. You've mentioned Phil Differ. I know that Phil just had a really successful play with Jim McLean, the Jim McLean play just before lockdown. And Save Ourselves, Jim Orr was involved in Save Ourselves in the very, very early days. And Jim took to, when he was approaching retirement, took to writing plays. So he wrote Bend It Like Baxter, Bend It Like Bratback. And, you know, it was a huge success. It was a massive success.
Bratback was outstanding, wasn't it? Huge laughs from start to finish. And my wife thought it was just a funny, funny play. She knows very little about football. That's a good sign.
And again, I think everything about it was, you know, you've got Jim there, who he obviously had this concept. And I remember him sending me the script, and I thought to myself, I couldn't put that script to Jim's character. You know, it's like what you said before. It was interesting. Now, he's obviously got a plan. He's got a plan, and you're part of that plan, Des. So could you maybe share with us how Bend It Like Bratback's going to be followed up by Jim, or how you're going to be involved?
Well, Bend It Like Bratback is going to... the next episode is going to be Bend It Like Bertie Auld. Listen, Jim Orr has sent me this play, draft one, then the next draft, then the next draft, then the next draft. No, it's not as if I can say, oh, I'm busy now and stuff like that. I'll watch it. Although, now, it's absolutely fantastic. But I know he's going to make it even better and better and better as he does. He's a perfectionist about Jim. But I can't tell you too much about it. But see, when it is going to storm at this play. But they've got Bertie Auld, who's one of the most popular Celtic men out there. Now, I sat next to Bertie Auld for 10 hours coming back from Vegas. I was over there entertaining the Lisbon Lions and all the Celtic boys. That, right, that was brilliant. So, you know how when you're sitting on a plane, you go, oh, I'll watch a movie, I'll read a book, oh, you know, I'm fed up. I didn't want that plane journey to end. He's telling me all these brilliant stories, and Jim Orr said to me, can you do Bertie Auld? And I was like, oh, right, okay. Like, and I phoned Jim up and I went, right, I've been watching the Celtic thing on Sky, you know that thing about famous clubs? It's on Sky and it's maybe 30 minutes on each one, great clubs, and it was Celtic Liverpool. So I watched the Celtic one again, it was really good, and wee Bertie was like, we were standing there in the tunnel, and I'm looking up at Sandro Mazzola, and I'm looking, and they were like film stars, and you saw me, and you saw wee Jinky, and I'm looking at them, Sandro Mazzola, and the famous Inter Milan, and I just stood there, and I started, and I went, hail, hail, the Celts are here.
Bertie had that real, you know, that every syllable a prisoner thing about, and he, you get right into his world. And I told Jim was like, that's it. And it was one of the ones, because people say to me, how do you do an impersonation? And it's a strange one. I was doing a monthly show in Oran Moor there called News Hacks, and there was a lot of politicians. So you had to go and learn them. Some of them were boring, Paul, right? They'd need nothing, but and learn them on YouTube. There's no fun in that, because that's like your homework. But then other ones, like you know, the bold Billy Connolly and Tommy Sheridan and all these guys, you learn it, and then you enjoy them, and you have a lot of fun with them, stuff like on the radio and stuff. But the Bertie was, I was running it by older people and all that, and they were going, that's brilliant. So I was recording it and going, who's this?
Alexandro Mazzola. They were standing there.
He was always dead passionate, but he is, you know,
Big Bully. And I turned around, wait. And what did I say? And Big Bully came in. And that's when I just, and we were standing, and it was magnificent.
He's all, but when I came off stage in Vegas, how good's that? People must be listening going, who's this? So I came off stage, and we're standing outside the next day, and you can imagine the atmosphere, right? It was about 40 degrees, right? I mean, Celsius. It was absolute roasting. And Bertie Stone there with the wee can of lager, and went,
you were magnificent last night, sir. You were absolutely. See up there when you were doing your Billy Con, even your Sylvester, your Rocky. It was magnificent. And I'm going, this is a Lisbon line. Give me a good review. Brilliant. It was incredible. You don't know it's...
So I'm going to be Bertie Auld. There you go. The exclusive. You're the first to know, Paul. We're going to debut it like Bertie. And it's going to be... I can't say too much about it, I don't think. But let's just say it goes right across the board. Every generation from a teenager to a pensioner will love this play, every Celtic fan. Oh, it's a belter. It really is a cracking script.
It's something I'm always interested in, and you get the generational thing if someone gives you their greatest 11 out of, made up of Celts that they've seen. And sometimes there's a guy in there that might take you by surprise because there's a specific affinity that you've got with them, Des. So if you want to run through your greatest ever Celtic 11...
I won't bore you and get into lots of detail as to why. I'll try and be brief, right? I think Big Fraser... I think he's a world-class goalkeeper. I think the guy's he's a giant. But Jim Orr made a good point. I know that sentimental, oh, Ronnie Simpson and all that, but, you know, when you see Foster, right, the guy was nicknamed The Wall by Barcelona. Say no more. When a team like Barcelona can't get by him. And look at him, that game against Rangers when he saved that penalty. And we knew he was going to save it. There's keepers like him and Big Arthur, and you go, he's going to save this penalty. You just knew. Tremendous goalkeeper. We need to tie him up. And I think that was Celtic's most influential signing under Lynn in the last 12 months, getting him in.
I agree with you.
Yeah. That gave that defence confidence that they didn't have before. When you know, Big Gordon and all that, you know, was, you know, I hope you didn't hear him, but he was going through a really sticky patch, you know. And then, so no question about the best ever, in my opinion, the best ever goalkeeper. Two and three, it'd be McGrain and Kieran Tierney. Two absolute crunching, no-nonsense fullbacks. I know Kieran will come back one day. He will. You know, no harm to the boy. That caused a big fight with us. You know, he's a young boy. He's away to Arsenal, you know. Back, now, you said something interesting. Van Dijk is a world-class player. He played for Celtic, so should we pick him then? Because he wasn't a Celtic like legend or didn't he play for many, many years.
That's a good point. And obviously he's gone on and developed, Des, you know, we all knew he was something special, but he's obviously stepped it up as well since leaving Celtic. And, you know, if you put in Van Dijk, which I did in my team, then you're maybe leaving out somebody the like, you know, well, Mjalby was just solid, wasn't he? And gorgeous.
By the way, he was, Yes, he was. The women were like, he kind of be a fit. He was big Dolph Lundgren. He was solid, no nonsense, big. And he was a no nonsense. He was just a crunch new thing. But do you know the funny thing is, though? See, when you think back to Ronnie Dyler, he had the best centre half partnership that I can remember. I mean, Denier and Van Dijk together were astounding footballers. You know, they might not be the big crunch and no nonsense Malby, but then again, Malby, Volharen, when he was back, he were amazing as well, weren't they?
Imagine being a centre forward, Des, and having to face that lot. Bobo Baldi.
Well, Baldi just missed. I don't think he just kind of misses the cup because. But by the way, there was a brilliant thing on Sky, and you know how when you get all the footballers chatting, and Ryan Giggs says, "We played Celtic." Says this big guy, Baldi. He was like a heavyweight boxer, and I was bouncing off him the whole night. He says I couldn't get near him. It was a nightmare. I came out all bruised from head to toe. So. He was obviously feared, and for many years Celtic were being bullied by other teams, you know, the bigger thing is that Rangers and all that, and then O'Neill just came right in, bang, bang, bang. So it would be Malby and Van Dijk then.
That's some back four, isn't it? Malby, Van Dijk, McGrain, Tierney, brilliant.
Because you've got them all there, I mean, you've got this, Van Dijk could play in his slippers, couldn't he, and he's then we're going to make, now this is interesting, I heard you having a debate about Nakamura and all that. I would have to stick the awesome Mravchik in there. Mm-hmm. We had the conversation, if he signed for Celtic at 33, there's no way any player could ever sign for a football team at 33 and give 3 years that he gave. An astounding brain, an astounding footballer, and even the pace and all that, that goal at Ibrox with Klaus and that, where he just went one way, the other way. And I spoke to Larson. He says, what a player he was. Now, Larson talked about Mravchik. So Mravchik's in that team. You can't leave him out. For just a one, imagine getting him, you say that, at 25.
See, the thing with Mravchik, from talking to a couple of the guys that played with him as well, Des, he was very laid back. So he wasn't a beast at training, for example. He wouldn't really go for the running side of things. Liked a wee smoke, liked a wee dram. And he would turn up and just, genius, any foot, absolute genius footballer.
I mean, but also he was in the game the whole game. He wasn't like, you know, I'll put him on for 5 minutes. Remember like the old Nakamura and all that, we did nothing, then this bit of him, this amazing free kick. This. But he was in the game, he was doing a guy, and even 36, incredible, just an absolute privilege to see that guy on the park. Obviously, a lot, McStay, I mentioned somebody earlier, need to be McStay in midfield as well. You need to have Dalglish and Larson up front as well. Dalglish, to me, an astounding talent. I was talking to these Liverpool players, fans on holiday, and we were all sitting there and I said, so we're talking, the Celtic game was on and it was an Irish bar. I says, who was your greatest? Before I could get to player, they went, Dalglish. Now, if a player is, if Kenny Dalglish is Liverpool fans' best ever player at a time when they won, what, 4 European Cups, and he was also the best player for Celtic at 10 year, how good a player is he? He's Liverpool's greatest ever in Celtic. So you need to have him and Larson, obviously. But then Jimmy Johnson, how can you leave him out? Exactly. I didn't see Johnson, though. But I know that he was obviously legendary. Out of all the Lisbon lines, I know that people are going to go, oh, wait a minute, I better put Bertie Auld in. No. And as you're right, it's a generation thing. You can't leave Larson out. You can't leave Johnson out. It was just when you watch the games, I know you said the grainy footage and all that, that game against Atletico Madrid, it was like Messi. I mean, you know, the way he was just, we're talking about a massive team and a world, you know, he ran the show that night, so it was a real talent.
Oh, he was unreal.
And I know people go, oh, aye, but back then it's different now. You know, guys like Dalglish and Johnson would still be an amazing football, you know, in this current thing. You know, they would. They just had a special, special set of skills.
I love when I hear that, Des, because it's almost like the same argument of, oh, if Celtic came down, it's not as if Jimmy Johnson of 1967 would be playing in 2017. He would have come through the same training regime, diet, and everything else. And someone says to me, because I says he was a bit of a one-off, Jimmy Johnson, he says, well, watch videos of Garrincha. And I did. I went on YouTube, watched Garrincha, and it was very similar, you know, the jinky style of dribbling. Unbelievable. Talking to some, it's always a privilege to talk to the Lions, and talking to some of they guys, they also put Bobby Murdoch on that pedestal as well, Des.
Aye,
you know?
aye. He was
just the orchestrator.
Yeah. Aye, as soon as was you know, was raving about him, saying he taught him how to pass a boy, taught him a thing, man. You know, so he was some player, and Jockstein said Murdoch couldn't move, he couldn't run, he didn't, but he says what a brain he had, what a pass. You know, my dad used to always, he says Bobby Murdoch, George Conley, you know, unsung heroes. My dad used to rave about George Conley. And they went, "Oh, this a boy that should have, he should have been massive, you know." And you know him, don't you?
Big George. Well, I was going to say, when you mentioned Dalglish and McGrain, what I always say, and I've said to George, is 1986, you've got Kenny Dalglish scoring against Chelsea when Liverpool won the league. Remember, he's a player manager and they win the league in 1986. You've got McGrain, part of that incredible goal that he starts at Love Street wearing the lime green strip. 36. And then you've got Conley. It was really, really sad, but I'm always really thankful that he came out the other end, Des, and he's clean, he's sober, and he's happy and content, which is brilliant, because he never was content, you know, as a Celtic player.
Well, my dad used to rave about him, Bobby Murdoch, all them. But yeah, he always, he said, that Connolly, what a player. And yeah, he had a brief spell at Celtic. But in saying that, I was watching loads of old stuff, and there was a Celtic Rangers game, and Connolly was the new. And I think that commentator was an old YouTube video, and I think it was I can't remember, McPherson, Montford, whatever. They went, this new boy, Connolly, you know. I think it was like maybe 19 or something, whatever. But he was running the show, you know, for the back and for all over. And the comparison to Beckenbauer was not far-fetched, and they always said that, the guy could play for the back.
Now, he's a big, genuine guy, really, really modest and stuff like that, but I did bring up Beckenbauer one day with him, Des, and he says to me, he goes, "I can see the comparisons, but I could pass the ball better than Beckenbauer." And he meant it.
But that's the kind of confidence you need. Brilliant.
Brilliant. Could you also tell our listeners where we can find you, Des, during lockdown, if we need a wee bit of light entertainment, your kind of live events, etc., where do we find you online?
If you go into Des McLean and Friends Comedy on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, I'm doing a stand-up comedy show every Saturday night via Zoom. I know people are thinking, "Oh, does that mean he's just playing to the internet?" No. If you just buy a ticket and make a wee small donation, me and four other comedians from all over the world, it could be New York, London, Ireland, whatever, we entertain you, just you, the people who have bought a ticket, the household who have just... And that's it. It was a fantastic show last night. And we've been doing... This will be the fourth, so... It's just from a fiver. And you go onto Facebook, just type in Des McLean, or just join Des McLean and Friends Comedy page, because I've already got 5,000 friends on the other personal page with 5,000 friends. So the insecure comedian who's got to accept everybody's a friend. My wife's like that. They 5,000 under your friends. Aye, they are. If they buy a ticket, they are. Aye.
But listen, Des, it's been an absolute pleasure for an hour and a quarter chatting to you tonight, and last week for an hour as well. Thanks for your time, and I'm really looking forward to Bend It Like Bertie.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks. It's been an absolute pleasure. You know, and this has been a highlight of lockdown. For I don't know how long this is going to go on, but it's been a pleasure. It's been lovely speaking to you, and that's an hour and a quarter that's just flown by.
Listen, stay safe, Des, and hopefully I can catch up with you in person once we get out of this, all right?
Same to you, pal. All the best. Hail, hail.
Network. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.